Welcome to the Back 9 Report, presented by eDraft.com.
Hello, and welcome to this week's edition of the Back 9 Report, presented by eDraft.com. We go live every Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, checking on the world with us all to bring you the latest news, insights, analysis, interviews, recaps, previews. Hey, we cover anything and everything else. My name is Carlos Torres. Every week, I'm alongside my co-host Fredo Leder, but he's not today with me. He's on a family trip, so we have Kieran Clark, our best friend, European guru, here for him. How are you, Kieran? Welcome back to the show.
Well, thank you, Carlos. I'm feeling very well and enjoying some of the wonderful fall, summer weather we're having here in Scotland. The weather, for the first time, believe it or not, is fantastic here. Great sunshine, lovely temperatures for the past month or so. As you saw at the Alfred Dunhill Links Championship a couple weeks ago, weather's fantastic here for once. Great weather for golf. And I'm looking forward to being on the show tonight because, obviously, in America, many people will be watching the Democratic debate with Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders debating head-to-head. So the alternative to that, Carlos, is us. So you can be Hillary and I'll be Bernie. We're the alternative tonight.
I have to be Hillary. Okay. Well, no problem. I'll take it. It's okay. But hey, we have a lot of action. We have a lot to talk about, especially with the President's Cup. And we have massive coverage on it. Let's recap. We're going to start in the weekend backspin. We're going to talk a little bit about the result, and then we're going to expand on it. And as you know, Fred cannot be away too far from us, so he left us some message, and he'll be some kind of our VIG today. He'll talk about the President's Cup, but talk a little bit about how good he made the prediction on Phil Mickelson. So you don't want to miss that. But let's start right away with the weekend backspin. And here we have to start talking about the President's Cup. It was played there at the Jack Nicklaus Golf Club in Songdo and Incheon City in Korea, where the Americans won for the sixth straight time on Sunday. And basically, it was not when Bill Haas defeated Sangmun Bae. It was when Chris Kirk, he made that 15-foot birdie putt to win his match in a stunning turnaround on the final hole. And then Bill Haas was the one that provided that storybook ending with the winning point for his team and for his father, U.S. Captain Jay Haas, who struggled there to get through a televised interview next to the 18th green, but said he had given his son a prep talk through the closing stages. And he was smart enough, let me tell you. He said that he told his son, win one for your mom. He didn't say win it for me. Win one for your mom. I just thought it was funny there. But anyway, I feel bad for Anirban Lahiri, who missed that 3-foot putt on the 18th hole there on the final day. Could have been the winning putt for the internationals, but definitely wasn't. At the end, it was the slimmest of margins, 1 point, 15.5 to 14.5. The slimmest since the famous tie in South Africa in 2003 on the President's Cup. You know, there were groans in the room when it was clear the President's Cup would not have a Spieth and Day match, but hey, that's what the internationals wanted. They demanded the number of matches to be reduced from 34 to 30, and it was an incredibly competitive edition that came down to the final match there, Bill Haas and Sangmun Bae. But let me tell you, there was a lot of great competition, and we're going to expand on it a little bit later on the practice ring. So, Kieran, how about this win by the U.S., 15.5 to 14.5?
Well, as you say there, Carlos, it was incredibly competitive, and that was despite the first session the Americans won on Thursday, 4-1. They were ahead by 3 points, and really at that point, we all kind of feared the worst. It was going to be another landslide victory for the Americans, a real kind of dull occasion for all concerned. But the internationals fought back brilliantly. The likes of Brandon Grace and Louis Oosthuizen in particular were fantastic and fought back in each of the sessions leading up to the singles, obviously being 1 point behind going into the final day. So we had a competition. We had some excitement there. And this event during the years has often been devoid of excitement. So this is a good thing to happen, particularly with the event being obviously in Korea, where Super Police to try and grow the game and grow interest in the game in that respect. And of course, the fact that the time difference as well. People in America had to stay up really late during the night, and people in the UK where I am had to literally not go to sleep at all to watch any of it. But it was certainly worth watching for those of us who did, because it was a fantastic theatre on the final day. And you know, in most of the singles matches, you know, only two of them were really one-sided of the 12. And the other 10, most of them went to either the last hole or the second last hole. So there's real excitement right to the end of all the matches. So it could have easily gone either way. As you say, Carlos, with that Kirk match against Lahiri being a pivotal moment, and of course, Bill Haas and Sangmun Bae. What a moment that was. You had the son of the American captain up against Sangmun Bae, obviously the home favourite in South Korea. So it was the perfect situation in many ways in terms of a story. And obviously Bill came out there on top in that final hole and won the match for his dad and won the point, the crucial point to take his team over the threshold to win the cup. And even though they won six times in a row now, the Americans, the event, it's a real shot of life into the event, which has been sort of lagging in recent times and scrambling for credibility. But anyone who watched it on Sunday there witnessed something that was really fantastic, really entertaining. And that's what we want to see, because you don't see enough of team in the Ryder Cup or any other team competition. Match play is a unique format. It brings all kinds of dynamics into it. And it was a really entertaining watch on Sunday. So the President's Cup, you know, it's never going to be at the level of the Ryder Cup and whatever, but that's fine. You know, as an event this week in South Korea, it was fantastic. And you know what? I'm looking forward to the next one in 2 years, because that was a good watch.
It was a good watch, and I'm going to have that question expanded on the practice range, so write it down. That's one of the ones that we're going to be talking about.
I've already got my answer in my head, Carlos.
Okay, good. I want to listen to it, and I know the Golfaholics and Back Nine is one to listen to it, so stay tuned. When we come back on the practice range, we're going to talk a lot more about the President's Cup. But we have some other tournaments that were played this weekend, and we're going to talk now about the European Tour and the British Masters that were played at the Woburn Golf Club in Buckinghamshire in England, where Sheffield-born Matt Fitzpatrick secured his maiden tour title when winning by two shots. It was the 24th European Tour event the 21-year-old played and became the 12th first-time winner this year on the European Tour season. The top of the leaderboard had been very crowded for most of the day, but Fitzpatrick pulled away from the field with four birdies between the 11th and 17th holes to uphold that two-shot lead. Søren Kjelstrup had been looking like a winner, but he putted off the green on the 15th when faced with a 30-foot eagle putt. He then bogeyed the next hole and completed a birdie last back nine in 37 shots to finish tied for second at 13 under with Fabrizio Sanofi and Shane Lowry, who also had a lot of chances during the weekend to go and complete some putts within 10 feet. He didn't make it, and he was very upset at it. But for Fitzpatrick, aged 21 years and 40 days, he became the youngest winner on the European Tour since 20-year-old Matteo Manassero won the BMW PGA Championship back in 2013. He also becomes the youngest British Masters winner since the event became part of the European Tour in 1972. The previous youngest winner had been Justin Rose, who was just 21 years and 307 days old when he won it in 2002. He's the fourth wire-to-wire winner in the Tour this season and ninth Englishman to score a win, so England is having a great season at the European Tour. You know, for, Kieran, the return of the British Masters after a six-year absence was hailed as a success. You know, there were 57,000 spectators that came through to watch across the 4 days in mid-October. And finally, I have to mention the tournament host, Ian Poulter. He finished T33. Other notables, Luke Donald, T5, Lee Westwood, T17, G-Mac, T30, Danny Willett, T46, and Miguel Angel Jimenez with T55. So how about this win by Matt Fitzpatrick?
Well, it was a fantastic win, Carlos, for him, and I think Matthew is someone who we've had an eye on for a long time now, since he won the U.S. Amateur 2 years ago and was leading amateur at the Open Championship in 2013 and in the U.S. Open last year at Pinehurst. And he's a fantastic player, a real talent, and he hits the ball so well. That's the thing people don't realise about him. He's only a small guy, he's only 5'10", and he's 150 pounds, but he can hit the ball a long way, and he's a really good striker of the ball. His iron play is superb, and he's a great short game as well. He's really a complete player, and I think he has all the tools to really go on to have a really strong career in the game, become one of the leading players not just in Europe, but in the entire world. And this is the first step to that, to get that first one under his belt. Now he's now 59th in the world rankings, so he's going to hopefully push on for the remainder of this year, getting that top 50. And of course, that opens up many doors, getting into the Masters, the US Open, and so on. And that's how you become an elite player, and potentially, of course, could be on the Ryder Cup team next year. In fact, I would say I'd put money on that happening. I think he's a fantastic talent, showed a real calmness under pressure, and a real tight, congested leaderboard on the back nine at Woburn Sunday. It was really, all kinds of players were in contention. As you say, Shane Lowry, who's obviously come back just from a month off after winning the Bridgestone, he came back last week at the Dunhill, and he played superbly at Woburn. But as you say, he really struggled in the greens, particularly on Saturday. He was playing beautifully, but just couldn't get the ball in the hole. But he's a fantastic player, and has now become one of the leading players in Europe. And Søren Kjelstad as well, he's had a fantastic season, the 40-year-old. He won in Ireland, of course, back in the summer. Had a couple of great finishes as well since then. And he played brilliantly, particularly in the front nine on Sunday. He missed three or four putts inside 8 feet on the front nine on Sunday. That would have obviously made a big difference and would have potentially handed the title to him. But Matthew Fitzpatrick, held his nerve and won that title in real calm fashion for someone who is still so inexperienced at just 21 years of age. A great win for him, and now I think he's going to push on to become more a consistent player going forward. I think he has all the tools to become one of the best players in the game. And as you say, Carlos, the British Masters coming back after a long hiatus was a success. Woburn is a lovely facility, a terrific looking golf course. I think the golf course isn't quite as good as it could be, but it's a lovely property. Right, it's set amongst the woods there, it's fantastic. And the crowds were excellent. The event was supported by broadcaster Sky Sports, who do massive work with the European Tour. And they handed out free tickets to spectators. So, as you say, almost 60,000 people came through the gates during the week. They had decent weather as well, which is always a bonus. And Sky themselves had fantastic coverage over in the UK, where they had extended coverage, coaching sessions with Lee Westwood and Luke Donald and Ian Poulter. And they even had Nick Doherty, who was a three-time winner in the European Tour, works as an analyst for Sky Sports. He was playing in the event and was actually mic'd up. So he actually commentated on his own round during it. So all kinds of things are going on during the event, and it was certainly a success. Good to see it back on the schedule, and hopefully we'll see it back there for many years to come. And one man we'll see certainly prominent for many years to come is Matthew Fitzpatrick, who I think is a fantastic player, as I say. And this year is the first win of what will be many in his career.
I have to agree with you. I love the way that Matt Fitzpatrick plays, and I can't wait to see him there in challenging maybe Jordan Spieth and Jason Day there for the top next year. So we'll see. Hopefully we can see him join them. Hey, there was also action on the LPGA, the CIMADARBI LPGA in Malaysia from the Kuala Lumpur Golf and Country Club in Kuala Lumpur in Malaysia, where I had forgotten really about Jessica Korda. I have to admit it, Korda. I was thinking about her the other week when I saw a photograph from her in an Instagram, and I said, what's happening to her this year? She hasn't been playing. Well, what happened? She won twice last year, but this year, the 22-year-old American, she entered this week with only one top 10 finish this year, and that was a tie for second back in January in Florida in the season opening event. She's a long hitter that failed to qualify for the Solheim Cup team and was passed over also as a captain pick. That should tell you how she was playing this year, but she won it on Sunday for her fourth title, closing with a 665 in sweltering conditions there for a four-stroke victory. And she cried there on the 18th green after her final putt. Definitely a lot of emotions for her. Finally playing well, she finished at 18 under and earned $300,000. She opened with rounds of 69, 67, 65 to take a two-stroke lead into the final day. The weekend 65s are her best two scores this year. And I must say, she only had one bogey on the whole weekend. So that shows you how well she played. Second-ranked Lydia Ko, number three Stacey Lewis, and 2014 winner Chen Chanfong tied for second. Goal finish with a 66. She was coming off consecutive victories in Canada and France, where she became the youngest major champion. But she was close here at second place. Fong had also a 66, and Lewis shot 67. Kieran, the event was the first of five straight in Asia for the LPGA, which continues now with the LPGA Cup Hanabang Championship next week in South Korea, followed by stops in Taiwan, China, and Japan.
Yeah, and Jessica Corder, obviously, as you say, has had a torrid season, really, and missed the cut incredibly in all five of the major championships. And as you see, was passed over by Julie Ingster for the Solheim Cup, and perhaps that was the instigator, the extra motivation to have a self-evaluation, look at yourself, introspection. You know, she had probably a bit of soul-searching there, and has come out after that, and has played superbly there. And that's a tremendous four rounds, putting that together all in the 60s, and a real dominant victory over what was a very strong field. As you say, Carl, she won twice last year, 22 years old, was really touted as being the next big thing, potentially, for American women's golf, and perhaps this will re-establish that status for her going forward. You know, she's still obviously so young, and there's so much talent there, and the four-time winner already on the LPGA Tour, and we expect her surely now to play well for the remainder of this season and look ahead to next season and try and rectify those poor performances in the big events and ensure that in 2 years' time she'll be back on the Solheim Cup team, because she's a real big talent and an impressive player. And of course, Lydia Ko finishing second, just a remarkable player. We all know how good she is and how incredible the consistency that she shows every week in and week out is astonishing. And I must also mention Yanni Tseng, who was really the dominant player, of course, around the turn of the decade. From 2009 to 2013, she was mostly the world number one, won a succession of major championships, and really the leading player. But since then, she had a real struggle with her game, probably psychologically more than anything else, struggled with her confidence, really struggled to make cuts, and she finished in fifth place. So that's her best finish for a long time. It's good to see her back playing well again. She's obviously a brilliant player 4 or 5 years ago, and if she can get some of that form back, she could certainly challenge the likes of Lydia Ko and Yanni Tseng and MB Park and so on, because Yanni was a fantastic player. I remember watching her win the Women's British Open at Carnoustie, and she was absolutely astonishing there, and a class above all of the other players. Now, with the strength of the game being stronger at the top now, I would say it'll be good to see her back up there, hopefully competing with those other players, because the likes of Lydia Ko and Jessica Corden there as well, and, you know, so many good young players at the top of the women's game at the moment, and it'd be nice to see one of the somewhat older, to put it mildly, slightly older players getting back to form and competing with her. But Jessica Corder, as you say, Carlos, you know, fantastic win, great performance, and she's now back on track because her career has a lot of potential.
A lot of potential. Like you mentioned, Yanni Tseng, I have to second those thoughts. She's such a great player. So a few years just back, she was the top player on a league on her own, and if she can really join. Yep. Those top three that the LPGA would be in for some ride. Hey, there were other three tournaments as well. Let's start with the Champions Tour. The Champions Tour SAS Championship that was played at the Prestonwood Country Club in Cary, North Carolina. Tom Lehman, wow, he had an eagle and three birdies in the final four holes Sunday to score the win. What a way to finish for the 56-year-old, the birdie, the par 4, 15 and 16, eagle, the par 5, 17th, and birdie. The par 4, 18 for 7 under, and a 1-stroke victory over Joe Durant. Berhan Langer and Kenny Perry tied for 3rd at 10 under. And Colin Montgomery tied for 5th at 8 under, but he took sole possession of first place of the Charles Schwab Cup race, 39 points ahead of Jeff Magrath after they began the week tied. Langer is 3rd with 3 events left on the tour. Also, another tour that is coming to an end is the Challenge Tour that played the Volopa Iron Challenge hosted by Mount Wolseley Hotel Spa and Golf Resort in Carlow there in Ireland. Tom Murray, he held 2 massive putts at the 18th, 1 in regulation play and 1 on the second play of hole to secure a dramatic maiden win and the European Challenge Tour title. He edged out Italian Nino Bertasio at the Pristine Carlow venue. Englishman Gary Boyd had cause for celebration despite missing out on the playoff by only a shot, and he virtually secured graduation to the European Tour for next year, finishing outright in third place, while his compatriot and former amateur champion Garrick Porteous sealed his best result of the season with a fourth place finish. Also on the Ladies European Tour, the Xiamen International Ladies Open, where 23-year-old Hee Yeom Myung fired a final round of 4 under par to claim a commanding 5-shot victory. She's a 50-year professional who this year graduated from the Korean LPGA from the secondary Dream Tour and is also a member of the China LPGA Tour. As the Xiamen Ladies International Open was a co-sanctioned event, Yeom will now be eligible to join the main Ladies European Tour. Thailand's Kuzma Meshai and 2014 champion Chu Shen Cheng of Chinese Taipei, they finished tied for second, and the disappointment on this tournament came from 19-year-old Chinese Home Hope, who is Yin Yang. My Chinese names are very hard to pronounce. She endured the biggest disappointment of the day, just one shot behind Young before she ran up a double bogey 7 on the par 5-9. She fought back into contention, but she was disqualified for signing the run score. She would have finished in tie for 4th, but finished signing up for 3 instead of a 4 and finished in 4th place. So how about these other 3 tournaments, Jim?
Yeah, well, I'm not going to try and pronounce those Chinese names because I'll just embarrass myself. So,
but, I did it already. You have to join me, man. You have to join me. I did it.
No, I'm going to leave you out there on your own to take the flack for pronouncing the names wrong. I'm not part of this. I'll stick to Tom Lehman. I can pronounce that just about. But yeah, obviously, a great win for Tom Lehman in the Champions Tour. That was an incredible finish. Those 3 birdies and an eagle to win by one shot. And as you see, Colin Montgomery there, now edging ahead in the race for the Charles Schwab Cup. And he is obviously someone who, he won 8 Order of Merits from the European Tour in his main career. And for that reason, he will certainly put a lot of credibility in trying to win that season-long competition in the Champions Tour. That will mean a lot to him, that accolade, if he can get it. And certainly now he's edging ahead, so he's a favourite going into those last 3 events. And on the Challenge Tour, I'd say a fantastic win for Tom Murray. Those 2 long putts were tremendous, and it's a great win for him. He tries to push himself towards those qualification places for the European Tour next season. And I'd say Gary Boyd is now virtually assured of himself of a return to the European Tour next year, having lost his card last year. And there's always a lot of interesting players on the Challenge Tour playing. A lot of players, I'd say, you know, amateur players, former amateur players, former winners in the European Tour, even guys like Simon Wakefield, who won at Glen Eagles a few years ago. I think it's 2007 he won there. You know, guys who have a lot of experience still trying to get back onto the European Tour. And I think someone like Philip Archer, who finished 23rd, he's almost edging towards senior age now. He's a really experienced player. And one player also stood out to me. I remember a couple of years ago, Carlos, in this show even, you were a big fan of Dan Huizing, on the German mm-hmm. player. Dutch player, I should say. Dutch player Dan Huizing on the Challenge Tour. He won twice in 2013, in September 2013, got into the European Tour last year, and it didn't quite happen for him. And now he's back on the Challenge Tour, and he finished in a tie for 23rd at the weekend there. So it's tough to come through the Challenge Tour. It's hard enough. It's hard enough lifestyle. It's tough money. It's a real struggle for a lot of these guys. And when they get on the European Tour, obviously the competition is even more intense and stronger, and there's greater depth to the field. So it's a there's no guarantees for these guys, but getting on the European Tour is also a massive reward for a great season, and Tom Murray is now one step closer to getting himself onto the European Tour next year.
And that will wrap up our weekend passing. We're going to take a short break now, and when we come back, we have the Par 5 News presented by United Golf Network, so don't go anywhere.
Thank you for listening. We'll be right back. In the meantime, don't forget to visit www.edraft.com for analysis, breaking news, and more. Also, remember to follow us on Twitter at edraftsports and on Facebook at facebook.com/edraftsports. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now it's time for the Par 5 News, sponsored by United Golf Network. And, Kieran, you're going to have the tee shot. I believe you're going to talk to us about Lee Westwood and Rory McIlroy. What do you have for us?
Yes, Carlos, I certainly am. I'm teeing off here. And it's been a difficult period in Lee Westwood's life this year, as he's currently in the process of a divorce from his wife of 16 years. They've been married for well over a decade, of course, and they have 2 children together, one who's 14, the other who's 10. And in recent months, you know, since that came out really in June that they split up after such a long time together, results have been mixed for the former world number one. He's struggled for consistent form. He's dropping down the rankings. And the 42-year-old confirmed last week that he has forsaken his membership on the PGA Tour and will be relocating back to the United Kingdom this year to play on the European Tour full-time from this point onwards, partly for that reason, also to be closer to his children, who I believe will be staying near their mother's family in Scotland. And of course, this will come 3 years after they moved as a family to Florida in an effort to improve Lee's chances of competing in the majors by having a good weather all around the year so that you can practice full time during the winter, which isn't always something you can do in the UK. So, an unfortunate story for that family, and we certainly wish them all well, hope they come through it strongly. And it's not easy, and Lee Westwood now will be looking at the European points list as being his route to come through onto the Ryder Cup team next year, where of course he's been a mainstay now for almost two decades since he's making his debut 20 years ago. And it's also been an intriguing year for Rory McIlroy, who of course has been somewhat overshadowed in recent months by the form of Jordan Spieth and Jason Day. They've grabbed the headlines during a period when the four-time major champion was out injured, of course, with a ruptured ankle ligament injury that he occurred playing soccer back in the summer. And reflecting on that lost season, the 26-year-old, who's always wonderfully candid with the media, perhaps too candid, some would say, he reflected on a wide-ranging number of topics, including conceding that he'd actually considered leaving the European Tour to play fully, 100%, on the PGA Tour. In this game, he cited the number of tournaments he has to play on both sides of the Atlantic and the travel all across the world being a reason, the fatigue that comes with that. And Northern Irishman has opened the door, by saying this, into the contentious debate of whether it is right that the European Tour requires membership from players if they are to be eligible to compete and qualify for the Ryder Cup team. Members, European players, if they want to play in the Ryder Cup, have to also be European Tour members. So guys like Carl Pedersen, for example, cannot play on the Ryder Cup team, because even though he's European, born in Sweden, but he can't play because he is not a member of the European Tour. And on this rule, this would actually exclude the in-form Paul Casey, who's also had a great resurgent year in America. At the moment, he's not a member of the European Tour, only on the PGA Tour, so that will disqualify him from being a potential player for Darren Clark. And of course, it would be fair to say that if Rory, Europe's best player, the biggest name player, what if he was to hand in his European Tour card? There would surely then have to be some changes and some concessions from the Tour when it comes to the Ryder Cup. So that's an interesting topic. But McIlroy did state on that particular subject that he wouldn't put the circuit in that position, as he feels that he owes them a lot for his early career, of course, and establishing his position in the game as a young man. But you have to wonder if some compromises from the European Tour will have to be made. And of course, in fact, you could actually argue that they have already been made, with the new chief executive of the European Tour, Keith Pelly, having granted Rory a pass into the upcoming lucrative final series events, despite not meeting the quota of competing in 13 European Tour sanctioned tournaments. And, it has to be the same rule for everybody, but in this case, they made an exception. And for me, though Keith Pelly has some views to the contrary and suggested otherwise, for me, this is a dangerous precedent to set. You know, you're giving a pass to the best player because of who he is. But what if a guy ranked 150th, you know, had the same issue then? Would you do the same for him? I would suspect not in that way. Players can almost hold the Tour to ransom, which is not a healthy position for the European Tour to be in. But the two have recently sat down and discussed all the issues that may be in the air, with the meeting being described as positive. And McIlroy still wishes to have a role on the European Tour, active role in fact, and that is certainly illustrated by his commitment, which was announced yesterday, to host the Irish Open for a further 3 years, having done so, of course, earlier this year at Royal County Down. So interesting times, however. But Carlos, you know, it seems that if you're a four-time major champion, it does seem that you can have a lot of power over the authorities.
We talked a little bit about that last week, and that was exactly one of the questions that I threw out. What if somebody else, you know, lower in the rankings comes and asks, hey, I would like an exemption too, that happened.
Absolutely.
I don't think so. And the other thing was, we haven't heard about anybody else talking about this from the players, but this last week I saw that Danny Willett was asked about it, but he... Mm-hmm. Surprisingly came and said he has no issue, even if that could stop him from ending the season at number one, you know. But it's surprising to me because he said that, and then he said that, I'm going to quote it here, if he wins more money than me playing less events, so be it. I appreciate the rules are rules, and there could be a few implications down the line of who finishes 61st or 111th on the order of merit and this and that. But from a personal point of view, winning the race to Dubai without Rory in it wouldn't be really that great. That's what Danny Willett said. So, you know, that's the guy that's in line to try to take the race to Dubai and is entitled to a lot of sponsorships. But he says that, well, so be it, but I'm with you. What happens, you know, this is a very dangerous precedent, even if it's an exemption, a special exemption, like Keith Spelly says, for the former number one and best player in the year, Brad McElroy. So we'll see and we'll stay tuned to that, but definitely not a good thing. Hey, talking about a former number one, another number one, Adam Scott. We talk about he and how his spotter at the President's Cup was an iceberg, well, which was the microcosmos of his season. But at the end, we saw a glimmer of what he could do if he just gets the confidence back in his putting with the change from the long to the short putter. And with 3 months left in the year, he's just getting warmed up. Now, this President's Cup is the start of a busy stretch for him. We'll be playing 7 of the next 9 weeks in 6 countries on 3 continents, all but one of them counting toward the world ranking. The biggest change for Scott is that 2 of them count toward the FedEx Cup. Scott didn't play his first tournament this year until the Cadillac Championship at Doral in March, and he played the HSBC Champions the previous fall, a tie for 12th. And with his slow start in America, never was a factor in the FedEx Cup. He started the playoffs at number 94, missed the cut at the Barclays, and his season was over. He left the President's Cup and will play next to Japan Open, then picked up 2 PGA Tour starts by playing the CIMB Classic in Malaysia and the HSBC Champions in Shanghai. He then heads home for the Australian Masters and the Australian Open before returning to his other home, the Bahamas, for the Hero World Challenge. And then he takes on his big winter break, right? Not necessarily. Well, while his schedule is not set, he said that he might play the Sunday Open in Honolulu on his way back from Australia. He also plans to play either the Northern Trust Open, he said Riviera is, and I quote, my favorite track on tour, or the Honda Classic. That would give him an additional 3 starts compared with what he played last season on the PGA Tour. He also will have a new caddy working for him. His name is David Clark. He plans to split time with Steve Williams. Stevie Williams will be in the back with Scott for 10 events. As you might remember, it was Scott who lured Williams out of early retirement when he brought him back for the big events, the U.S. Open, the Open, the World Golf Championship, and the PGA Championship. Clark, meanwhile, was in the back for Paul Casey this year and will be the main guy for Scott this season. So I think that most of all, he has a very fast start. It would be good for him. But I think that, Kieran, most of all would be how he reacts to the short putter. I think that finally he got it on track there at President's Cup.
Yeah, it will be interesting to hear Adam Scott adopt Harry Copes' anchor putting rule, of course. But in the end, you can argue that the fact is he didn't putt particularly well as it was with the long putter. You know, we saw that at the old course. Andrew, he missed that short putt on the 15th to really fall at contention there on the final day of the Open. So Adam Scott's obviously been a fantastic player for the last few years, and winning the Masters 2 years ago, being world number one. But the past year, he's declined. It's not just his putting; his long game has also declined. So there's a lot for him to get right on and off the course. Of course, he did become a father earlier this year, so perhaps that's taken his attention away from the game. So we'll see if Adam Scott can get back on top and challenge the guys at the top of the game, because he's obviously a fantastic player, and now is one of the veterans, if you like, compared to those younger guys. But moving on, and for some reason, Carlos, and this happens all the time, it seems, whenever I come onto the show, which is only every month or so, you know, I'm always tasked with having to discuss a certain Mr. Donald Trump.
Your view is unique, Kieran. That's why you have to talk about him. It's unique.
Well, yeah, every time I come on the show, I've got to talk about him. So here we go. I'm doing it once again. And, yep, he continues to dominate the headlines by leading an increasingly disturbing Republican presidential race, with his thoughts on a number of issues gaining traction. However, on one particular topic, he remains perhaps most committed of all. And that is it is his campaign against wind farms over here on this side of the pond. And despite losing at every stage of the courts in Scotland, Trump is taking his objection to wind turbines being built 2 miles from his spectacular golf estate in Aberdeenshire to the UK Supreme Court in London. And if he loses this time at the Supreme Court, which he probably will, then he has threatened to take his case all the way to the European courts, wasting time and money in the process. And in fact, Carlos, you know, perhaps we've actually discovered the true motivation for for Donald Trump's run to become president of the U.S. If he ends up in the White House, he could always send some drones to blow up these pesky wind farms if all else fails. So that's his true motivation for running for president. And Trump has also accused Scotland's former First Minister, Alex Salmond, who was previously an instrumental ally, of being biased in favour of the £230 million environmental project and thus skewing the approval process in their favour. And those allegations, not surprisingly, were deemed to be unfounded. So, Carlos, quite simply, Donald doesn't take no for an answer.
I love the thing about the drones. I would love to see that.
At the next debate, someone's going to ask him that question. I think we've gone to an exclusive here. Donald Trump is running for president not because he cares about the country or wants to make big changes, because he wants to destroy the wind farms. That's what he wants to do.
I hope somebody would do that. Let's see what happens. Anyway, hey, I have some LPGA and ABC news here for you. The LPGA announced a new event for this next season. It's called the LPGA World Championship. The Travis Point Country Club in Ann Arbor, Michigan. It's going to be from May 26th to the 29th, and will be held over the Memorial Day weekend, and will feature a full field of 144 players competing in a 72-hole showcase for a purse of $1.3 million. The LPGA Classic, which is host in Grand Rapids at the second tournament on the LPGA Tour schedule in the state of Michigan. Volvic signed a 3-year deal as the sponsor for the LPGA Volvic Championship, and they have been an official sponsor for the LPGA for the past 5 years, including on the center tour of the Volvic Championship and also the Volvic Race for the Card. Here at the Backline Report, we have always been supporters and big followers of the LPGA, have seen their incredible growth. You know, since 2011, they have now added 10 new North American-based events. In addition to this so-called home growth, they have added 4 international events during that same period. Outside their tournament schedule, the LPGA has seen the TV more than double to over 400 hours of coverage, expanded to over 150 countries that carry its telecast each week, and increased the total purse level on tour from $44 to $16 million. So, it's great news for them that they keep growing the tournaments and growing the purses there. And while we're at it, you know, the final round of the final event of this season, then the LPGA Tour season, which is the CME Group Tour Championship, will be aired live on ABC from 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern Time on Sunday, November 22nd. The event will be presented with limited commercial interruptions thanks to CME Group. Tom Rinaldi will call the play on ABC's telecast, joined by the team that called the RICO Women's British Open Championship on ESPN, which is comprised by Dottie Pepper, Judy Rankin, Andy North, and Billy Kratzer, lead by coordinating producer Mike McWade, who will cover the final round for ABC. The first three rounds will be broadcast on Golf Channel, with ESPN producing the telecast. So that's going to be incredible to see that. And talking finally about ABC and ESPN, multiple sources confirm that ESPN will be stepping away from its RNA broadcast arrangement a year early, with NBC and Golf Channel stepping in to handle next year's Open Championship and other RNA events. This comes as a little surprise, considering that BBC's recent decision to walk away a year early and news from ESPN shedding contracts and selecting rights deals as part of the Disney-mandated cascading. The worldwide leading sports, ESPN, recently canceled the annual fall survey trip to Great Britain as part of its Open Championship, Senior Open Championship, and Women's British Open planning. That signal to its golf teams of a multi-decade arrangement. As you might remember, NBC and Golf Channel, they won a bidding war for the Open beginning in 2017, but now will be heading into the 2016 Open at Royal Troon, with its first major championship since losing the USGA package back in 2013 to Fox Sports. And they wanted very badly to add this to their already deep coverage next year in golf, which is also carrying the return of golf to the Olympics game. So, Kieran, how about this and the news that you have for us?
Yeah, as you say there about the ESPN dropping the Open Championship coverage, obviously you say the BBC did the same in this country as well. So that's a big change for the broadcasting both on this side of the pond and your side next year for the Open at Royal Troon. And I must say one thing about ESPN is their coverage has always been very well received, and their announcers have always been excellent, particularly Paul Leisinger, who I think is a fantastic announcer and a great analyst. And we have him for on the BBC for the Masters every April. He works for the BBC here in the UK, and he's excellent there, and I'm sure he's exactly the same over in the States for ESPN. So hopefully someone has the wisdom to sign him up on one of the major networks going forward, whether it be NBC or CBS or so on, because I think he's a real strong voice and someone who's can offer really strong perspectives. But yes, moving on to speaking of strength, and the one person that's certainly shown that is Rory McIlroy. And there was a fascinating study that came from Santander Spendalytics, which is I'm not sure if I should have said that right, but anyway, it's an innovative application that tells customers just how much they spend on their debit and credit card and where they spend it. Santander is a banking firm who actually sponsor Rory McIlroy. And over the last 12 months, the statistics have shown, this is incredible, that Rory has hit, in the past year, 16,500 golf balls, spent 350 hours on planes, walked 1,500 kilometres on golf courses, and signed more than 6,300 autographs. More startlingly, however, were the stats from his workouts. And apparently, McIlroy has swam 3,300 lengths in the swimming pool, done 6,800 push-ups, and cycled more than 640 kilometres on a bike. And of course, that isn't quite so impressive, it has to be said, when you consider that Gary Player claims to do that every single day. But seriously, it was fascinating, and I do urge everyone to look up the other... What's that?
Let's get serious, yes, let's get serious.
Yes, let's get serious. Gary Player, of course, does not do 6,800 push-ups every single day. He does 10,000, at least, that's what he claims. Yeah, it was fascinating. There are other stats as well about how many interviews Rory has done in the past year, and how many days away from home he's been. I think it's 280 days away from home, which is incredible. And it gives you a decent understanding of what a leading professional golfer has to do and what he does throughout the year. And it shows you just how much work and travel they have to put into their careers to become as successful as they are. So, Carlos, I don't know about you, but I don't think I've even done 63 push-ups this year, never mind 6,000.
I don't know if I've done it in the past 10 years, so. I'm worse than that, so. Anyway, what I really can get around still is how they managed to see how many signatures he gave for autographs. I mean, where did they get that number from? I can guess the rest of them, right? But this one, wow. What, Rory keeps a track on him? Or he has somebody? Okay, you've done 50, go.
Well, that's right, Carlos. You have to think, well, if Rory is at a golf tournament, well, that's quite easy to measure that. But if Rory's walking down the street, or if he's in a restaurant, or if he's at a rugby match like he was the other day watching Ireland, then is there someone there watching him all the time, counting who amount of signatures he signed? That's a bit creepy.
Yeah, that's incredible. Anyway, I think they can measure anything these days with technologies. I don't know. We'll see. Anyway, the final news has come from Australia, and I have a couple of them. The President's Cup will be traveling to the golf course of Melbourne in 2019 after it's held at the Liberty National in New Jersey in 2017. The state of Victoria will also host the 2016 World Cup of Golf. That announcement that Melbourne will host the event was made by PGA Tour Commissioner Tim Finchin, who was joined by the Honorable John Aaron, Victoria Minister for Tourism and Major Events, to announce an agreement between the two organizations that names the state of Victoria as the host for the World Cup of Golf in 2016 and the President's Cup in 2019. This partnership marks the return of the President's Cup to Australia for the third time in its 25-year history, and the fifth time in the 58-year history of the World Cup of Golf. So in 2016, the World Cup will return to its original team format, where both events will be played in November timeframe in 2016 and 2019 on one of Melbourne's premier sand-built golf courses. The venue and exact dates will be announced at a later time. And as you might remember, in Melbourne was where it was the only victory that the Internationals have ever had so far on the President's Cup. That was in 1998. The other time it was in 2011. I'm sorry. And as you might remember as well, Jason Day and Adam Scott were members of that 2011 international team. The last one there from Australia is that Australia's number one golfing tournament, the Australian Open, will continue to call Sydney home after a historic agreement was struck between the New South Wales government and Golf Australia, which is the body that governs the sport in the country. Sydney will continue to host Golf's Australian Open for the next 8 years, securing those hosting rights until 2023, and is guaranteed to host the event for at least 6 of the next 8 years. There's a possibility that once every 4 years, the tournament will be staged elsewhere as a release year. That, according to Stuart Ayers, New South Wales Minister for Trade, Tourism and Major Events and Minister for Sport. This news comes as Sydney is preparing for the tour to stage its 10th consecutive Australian Open next month, where American Jordan Spieth, who is the current number one and defending champion, and Adam Scott, Australia's number two, are among the high-profile names set to compete at this year's event, which will take place from November 26th to the 29th. So you might remember the past 2 years, and we've talked about this a lot, like Golf Australia's Chief Executive Officer Stephen Pitt said, Rory McIlroy and Jordan Spieth have each springboarded to the world number one status and major championship victories after winning the Stonehaven Cup. So, Kieran, who will be this year? Adam Scott? What do you think?
Well, quite possibly. You know, Adam Scott, obviously, as we talked about earlier, is looking for a big end to this season to really catapult himself into next year. And you're right, you know, Rory in 2013 won in Australia against Adam Scott, of course, and really went on saved what was a really poor season that year, as he overcame the switch to Nike that season, and he went on 2014, of course, to win the two majors and become the world number one once again. And of course, last year, Jordan Spieth winning there in Australia with that final round of 62, I think was one of the best rounds of last season. And he went on from that, of course, to achieve the remarkable things that he has done this year. So the events in Australia, every single end of the year, are always fantastic. They're played in terrific golf courses, there's good atmospheres, there's good fields, and certainly it's an opportunity for these players, some players who have perhaps had a lackluster year, to really rectify that and push themselves on to a better year next year. So, and Royal Melbourne there as well, you mentioned about being the President's Cup venue potentially in 4 years' time. You know, it's one of the world's great golf courses up there, probably in the top five, top ten. And any chance to see that is a welcome thing. And that will certainly enhance the President's Cup when it goes there in the future. Because let's be honest here, the Jack Nicklaus Golf Club in South Korea, that wasn't a very good golf course.
Yeah, it was. Hey, that wraps up our Par 5 News, sponsored by United Golf Network, who wants every golfer to enjoy the game more and have the opportunity to earn money while doing it. They offer a top line of golf products, including popular brand names like Nike, Wilson, Greg Norman, Ashworth, TaylorMade, Adidas, and Where to Win. Everything a golfer needs, clubs, balls, bags, shoes, apparel, and accessories are available with discount coupons for huge savings. United Golf Network not only has an excellent product line, it also offers every golf nut the chance to earn commissions on product through their director's program. United Golf Network provides instant and free access to Global Affinity, which offers discounts to travel through Wyndham Endless Vacations. Another free perk is membership through MyGolf NUS, which offers discounted rounds of golf in 16 states and 3 Canadian provinces. And finally, For Sale by Owner allows members to sell used or new golf equipment online. Visit United Golf Network today and check out the products, discounts, and their opportunity. So with that, we wrap up our Par 5 News, and we're going to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to have our VIG and practice range. You don't want to miss this. We're going to start it with Fred Alvader, so don't go away.
Thank you for listening to the Back 9 Report presented by eDraft.com. We'll be right back. Don't forget to check out our co-hosts on Twitter by clicking their names in the episode description. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now we're going to make a kind of a VIG here with Fred Alvader. And it's because we're going to be discussing also in the practice range about the President's Cup. We're going to now give you our insight and analysis on what it meant. We're going to talk about the young talent, help the internationals. The question that I have for Kieran is this now at Ryder Cup level? We're going to give a reflection of the near future and break down what had happened during the whole weekend. So let's start with Fred's take on what happened this past weekend and what he thinks about what happened and went through there on the President's Cup.
Hey, guys. Boy, I know you're going to be talking about the President's Cup tonight, and I just wanted to send a tape in here and talk a little bit about what I saw. You know, the PGA Tour just is seeing amazing cash windfalls from the, you know, from this President's Cup. You know, they tried to copy the Ryder Cup that was generating so much money for the PGA of America and the RNA. And so back in 94, they decided to hold this President's Cup, and it's really been a big deal for them. But it was kind of on the verge of becoming insignificant because the internationals could not wage, you know, they just couldn't put together a good enough team to create a good opponent for the United States. So, you know, it takes two worthy opponents to make a really strong athletic competition. Well, yeah, the President's Cup has had a few memorable moments. They had a win in Royal Melbourne in 1998, and then they had the unforgettable tie in 2003 in South Africa when Jack Nicklaus, Gary Player were the captains. But, you know, it seems like the injection of new talent and a change in this format has really created a change for the better in the President's Cup. The change in format especially made a big difference. You know, it was rumored that the internationals threatened to boycott this year if changes weren't made. And PGA Tour Commissioner Tim Finch, not wanting to lose this huge revenue-producing event, relented to the pressure and single-handedly breathed new life into this rapidly dying President's Cup. The elimination of four team matches reduced the number of points from 34 to 30. Captain Nick Price could sit certain players in each session, which allowed him to feature his strongest competitors. Regardless of how the changes came about, the new system works, and the Americans were barely able to squeak out the one-point victory in Korea on Sunday. And hey, talking about the one-point victory, the captains' picks came up especially big in this President's Cup. You know, I was a little bit against the choice of Phil Mickelson for a captain's pick for Jay Haas for the President's Cup, but boy, did he turn out big. His 3-0-1 record was only tied by Zach Johnson, and they happened to pair up quite a bit in team matches. So he won those points, and then he won a big singles point on Sunday. And then on Sunday, wasn't it exciting? So many matches went down to the final hole. And then isn't it ironic that Jay Haas's son, Bill Haas, who was a captain's pick, ended up winning the decisive point in the final match on the last hole. So the internationals were in this thing right up to the end. It was really good fun to watch. It was great that the President's Cup got to travel to Korea outside the United States. They got to see some other parts of the world. And Asia is such a big market for golf in the future that really great to have the PGA Tour and the rest of the world get over there. Sungmin Bae got to play, played well. It was really a big deal. So really glad to see a good President's Cup, and I hope you guys have a great show. So talk to you later, guys.
So that was Fred Alvader and his take, unique take like usual, on what happened, went down there in the President's Cup.
I've got to say, Carlos, you know, Fred making a cameo appearance on the show tonight, he's turning into Alfred Hitchcock or Quentin Tarantino, who make little appearances in their films. We can't get rid of him. He's always there somewhere in the background, even when he's not actually there. He keeps turning up.
Yeah, I don't believe him anymore when he says, I'm not going to be in the show. Really, what part
he's
of the show?
He's always in the show. We'll never get rid of him.
Yeah, it's impossible. It's impossible. Hey, that's what he said. But going back to the President's Cup, I'm going to say, I know that he was very adamant about not picking Phil Mickelson. I was about Bill Haas. because I could understand Phil Mickelson, yes, the veteran, and he wasn't playing well during the whole season. Mm-hmm. But we know he rises us up to these occasions. I mean, in the majors, he could be playing very bad for the whole month or for a whole year, and he could come up and play and be there atop the leaderboard and compete. So we know about Phil Mickelson and being the veteran that he is and playing the only player to play during all President's Cup. But I wasn't in favor of Bill Haas being there. But I was on silence there at the end, the way that he played that final match. But anyway, the way they got there, it was really incredible. Like what you mentioned at the beginning there in the Leaping Backs thing, I thought on Thursday, I stood up until the very end of it. I mean, here, it was not as much as you guys that you couldn't sleep there in Europe. Here, I just had to stay up until 3 a.m. So it wasn't that bad. But anyway, I stood up all that time, and then I said when it was 4-1, and the way that it wasn't only that it was 4-1, it was the way that the Americans won mm-hmm. all their matches. I mean, I thought, this is going bad. This is going down bad. I mean, what can yeah. they do? But then the internationals came back and won 3 out of 5on Friday with a Friday 4-ball. And then it wasn't only that they won it. It was the way that they reacted and the way that the Americans went out to play. And you just said that they were up to it. They were up to the challenge. They really went to it. Of course, there was this situation with Phil Mickelson that I want to ask you about it, but about the firmer ball that he was saying there and all that stuff that almost, I was just hoping that this wouldn't come down to the internationals winning by 1 point, because then we would be listening to all this about Phil Mickelson and what he did about the one ball and the ruling that he didn't know, the committee and all that. I think we've heard it all. But at the end of the day, you got to know your rules. If there was one great thing that I got from that, it was that, you know, it lit up that fire in him. I think maybe a little too much, because if you listen to what he said then afterwards, that trash talking on the post conference, that he said, you know, we spotted the internationals, the best team of the international, 2 holes, and they still couldn't beat us. Just saying. He's always been known for his trash talking, but anyway, that hole out from the bunker was magnificent, and that was pure Phil Mickelson. So, it was a great day that second day, and from there you know that the Americans and the internationals, it looks like the Americans were playing on the defense all the time, preventing that 1 point lead all the way to the end. Then came the Sunday, final day, and the Americans actually started like you would expect. They were better on paper 1-12. So you would expect them to blow them out. And they were ahead in 9 of those singles matches. So you say, okay, this is the blowout that we were expecting at the end. But no, you got to give credit to these guys. I mean, Julius Heisen came back to tie Patrick Reed, who was playing excellent. And the level of golf that we saw playing on that Sunday was excellent. On the Adam Scott and Ricky Fowler, disappeared after the second half, the back nine of the second match. It's really a disappointment to me with the way that Ricky Fowler was playing. And Adam Scott couldn't make a putt until this match, even if his life depended on it. But I was saying to a friend here, I would say the first one between them that makes a putt, that's going to win. And that was Adam Scott when he made one. And from there, he just cruised over. Dustin Johnson, Danny Lee, they came back and forth. Danny Lee came actually to lead back up. Dustin Johnson at the end won the 2-1. J.B. Holmes, who was the substituting Jim Furyk, and I always said that was a good pick for him for the Americans. It went down to the final one where Hideki Matsuyama, as you all know, one of my favorite players, he did the birdie there at 18 to give the win. Bubba Watson and Sung Chai Jai Lee gave a show there, and they had the point. Jimmy Walker, who was another disappointment, he disappeared as well. I mean, I don't think he even played well even one match. Even the first one, it was Ricky Fowler, the one that carried him. But he lost to Stephen Bowditch. Phil Mickelson really destroyed Charles Ross there, 5-4. And the one that we talked about, Chris Kirk and Anibar Lahiri, at that point, as you see, there was 12.5 to 11.5 with the international needing just 3 points to win. And as you saw, Jordan Spieth, which was the surprise there, I thought he would beat Mark Leishman, even though Mark Leishman had been playing well all week. I thought that the way that Jordan Spieth had been playing with that birdie blitz that he carried Patrick Reed and basically gave the Americans the lead the day before, I thought he was going to breeze by Mark Leishman when he started two up. But kudos to Mark Leishman, who fought back and beat Jordan Spieth. And Brandon Grace was definitely a stalwart for the internationals. He played lights out and he beat Matt Kuchar. So you knew those two were coming. So if Anivar Lahiri would have won that, hey, the history would have been different. But at the end, it was Chris Kirk who really came through during that 15-foot putt. And one of the most stoic players did a fist bump. I went like, what? He celebrated that? That tells you how much that putt meant. So I'm going to pass it on to you now, Kieran. But I really, really one point I want to make sure I get through is that I know that a lot has been said about the format change giving the internationals an advantage or maybe closing the gap. But I really thought that it was the internationals' play that came up, especially in the singles. You could see it. I mean, the level of play there, they battle with the Americans toe-to-toe. I really think they deserve more of a recognition for their play rather than what is being said that it's because of the format change. I really think they really came up to the challenge and this is going to be a close one, just like it happened to the Ryder Cup, that when the format changed, the Europeans came back to it. This is what I think is going to happen, but it's more because of the play that is actually going to happen.
Yeah, I think that's an important point, Carlos, about the players and the way they fought back, particularly, as you said there about the first session, it wasn't just 4-1 on Thursday. It was they were defeated comfortably in all of those matches. You know, they're 3-2s, 5-4s, 4-3s. So they were not even close in the first day. And they came back with tremendous determination. You know, and for a team this is perhaps one disadvantage that they have that will be very hard to overcome ever, is the respect that they're such a disparate group. They're from all over the world, you know, from all four corners of the globe. It's not like playing for America where you're all playing for the same country, you'll have similarities and that's what, even playing for Europe, you're playing for the continent, you're playing for the tour. But when you're playing for internationals, you're all from all over the place, and guys from Korea, Australia, South Africa, even South America and even Canada can play in this. So they're from all over the place. But despite that, they came together really strongly as a team. And generally speaking, they played tremendously well. And they fought back progressively each day of the competition. And the last 3 days of the President's Cup were tremendous to watch. It was really entertaining stuff, highly competitive. The standard of play was excellent from a lot of the players. And particularly that final day was fantastic theatre. It was back and forth. It was completely unpredictable until literally the last putt of the day, and you know that's what you want to see, because irrespective of, you know, who's playing, which teams are which, and the format and whatever, it's all about, you know, the players themselves and how they step up to the mark, because and they did so, the international players. And let's remember, even though the format was in the old format back 2 years ago at Muirfield Village, the international team played very strongly 2 years ago as well, and they came very close on the singles to causing a potentially massive upset. They weren't that far behind the Americans that day either. So the international team, from top to bottom, is getting stronger. And it's ironic in the respect that the best player this year, by far, for the internationals was Jason Day, obviously, winning the PGA Championship, being world number one and so on. And he had a really poor week from results. He didn't win a single match. And neither did Adam Scott. You know, obviously, sorry, he won a singles match. That's the only match he won for the entire week. So arguably their two best players didn't deliver. And they relied on the second-tier players, if you like, the likes of Louis Oosthuizen and Brandon Grace, Mark Leishman. Those guys delivered in abundance. You have players like Matsuyama, who's one of the best swingers of a club in the game, and someone like Danny Lee, who's had a fantastic second half of the season in the PGA Tour. Tong Chai Jaidi is someone who is remarkably consistent in the European Tour, just won a few weeks ago as well. So they're all really good players. And Mark Leishman, someone who was playing Jordan Spieth on the final day, people thought it would be a walkover for Spieth. But Mark Leishman, we have to remember, someone who very nearly won the Masters 2 years ago and very nearly won the Open Championship this year, losing in that playoff along with Oosthuizen and Johnson. So these are really excellent players, international players who are becoming more confident, more prominent all the time. They're playing regularly on the PGA Tour. They're playing in the big events all the time. Look at Brandon Grace, a guy who was unbelievably good all week at the President's Cup. He's someone who has been fantastic in Europe for a number of years and a consistent winner. But this year, over in America, he, of course, came so close to winning the U.S. Open at Chambers Bay. Really, probably should have won it if it wasn't for one terrible swing on the 16th hole. So these guys are excellent players, and they bounce back terrifically. So the togetherness that perhaps surprised me, as they are such a disparate group in terms of their nationalities. But it was fantastic theatre. And for the Americans, they had to obviously withstand a great onslaught. And they had to rely on some of the players who, as you say, Phil Mickelson, who there was a lot of controversial stuff about his pick. A lot of people thought it should have been Brooks Koepka, a young guy coming up in the game, who, of course, last week finished second at the Alfred Dunhill Link Championship in St Andrews. But Mickelson silenced his critics with a brilliant performance. He played superbly, as you mentioned there, Carlos, as well. Phil, even though his form in the regular events has been terrible, really, for the past two or three years, he's consistently brought his best game to the big events. Obviously, he finished second at the Masters, and he finished second at the PGA last year, and of course, they won the Open Championship the year before that. So Phil can still play and bring his game for the big occasions. And I think there's almost a determination from Mickelson this time, because he's aware that his career is certainly in the latter half of it, at least. He's getting towards the end of his career as a main player and representing America in these teams, which he has done for 25 years. And his record, particularly in the Ryder Cup, has been extremely poor. So he's a competitive guy. He's a true sportsman. He wants to rectify that record. So he came to the President's Cup, wanted to show not just Jay Haas and whatever he can still play this week, but to show Davis Love, who was assistant captain to Jay Haas, that he can still be a member of the Ryder Cup team next year at Hazeltine, despite being at that point 47 years old. So Phil, perhaps next year looking ahead to Hazeltine, we might think that could be his swan song representing America. He's now showing Davis Love that he can still be a threat and a consistent player in team competition. And same with Zach Johnson, who is, of course, 39 years old, the Open champion. I think he could be someone in the next 3-4 years who could become really the senior statesman of the American teams. I rate him so highly as a player. I think he's a massively underrated player. People forget he's a two-time major champion now, a guy that's won 12 times in the PGA Tour. He is a fantastic player and a great competitor, and I think he's someone who, with a real strong attitude as well, he could be a real mainstay for the Americans going forward into his 40s as well. But as you say, Carlos, there were so many good matches, so many good performances. That final day, most of the matches went to the last couple of holes, which was terrific theatre. And the President's Cup, you probably asked me a minute about, is it getting towards the Ryder Cup? Well, I think we'll put that aside for a moment and just say the President's Cup this year was a fantastic watch. It was great entertainment, and that's what matters to me most of all. In the end, the President's Cup and the Ryder Cup, they are, in essence, exhibitions. Obviously, they're massive money-making events, and they're hugely popular, particularly the Ryder Cup, of course, being the most watched event in the game. But despite that, they are, at heart, exhibitions and really showcasing the game of golf. And for the game going to South Korea for the first time for the President's Cup, that new massive audience in Asia, they saw a lot of good golf and saw some great competition and great entertainment, and that's only a good thing for the game going forward.
It has to be, and definitely it was unfortunate that, it's great that it was there in South Korea, like you mentioned, that Asian market got that exposure to it,
yeah.
Especially in South Korea, where it's growing, and unfortunately not that much with the men, and I think that's part of the problem, that they have to serve those 2 years mandatory, that maybe doesn't allow like the women that come out there, they don't have to do that, they just keep playing the golf. But I think those 2 years hurt a lot of the male players there. But anyway, great market, growing market, and great for them. Unfortunately, here in the States, and maybe there in Europe because of the time, it couldn't be watched maybe only by the hardcore golf fans,
the hardcore insomniacs, I think, Carlos.
that's right. So, but it was a great show. The ones that couldn't watch it, it was after that first day, it was all heart pumping. It was incredible play. And one of the questions that we have here is whether the young talent came through for the internationals. I wouldn't say that. It was the young talents, the one that did it for them. I really think it was more, if you come to think about it, Louis Heisen and Brendan Grace is not a young guy, but he's not an old guy either. But I would say that the young guys there are Hideki Matsuyama, Danny Lee, San Juan Bay, well, not that much. But anyway, they didn't have that much of a young nucleus there to be talking about that they made the impact. Maybe Hideki Matsuyama was the only one with a 2-1-1 record. Jason Day, the world number one, 0-4-1, so he didn't have anything. They do have some strong core, like Adam Scott said afterwards, when he looked down at Brandon Grace, Matsuyama, at Sangmun Bay, and Arivan Lahiri, he said that that's the future of the President's Cup. I think it's true, and I think they really have a great ingredient, a great core. There are some international young players also coming up, but I think it wasn't that much of the youngsters there that did it. It was really the veterans that did it there for the internationals. And for the U.S., of course, Jordan Spieth is the young guy there. And I really saw a coming of age for him. That fieriness, even though he lost that one to Mark Leishman, and like you mentioned, Mark Leishman has been playing great. And he showed, even though his record of Mark Leishman was 1-1-1, the ones that he lost and the one that he has was in playing in the foursomes and the four ball. And he really showed up. I mean, you can see how good he's playing. He wasn't the one that caused the loss in the foursome. So he's a great player as well. But Jordan Spieth, what a great performance for him when he carried his team, Patrick Reed, there in that match. That he was even giving him a pat in the back, like, hey, come on, don't worry, it's okay, I'm taking care of this. And when he called David Love III in the bunker and said, I'm gonna make this shot. And he did it. He came and did the shot and hold the ball. And then he pointed at David's Love like, hey, I told you I was going to make this. You know, it's Jordan Spieth. It's just something else to watch. But going forward, I think that the format is going to help. I think the internationals are really, you know, getting a higher level as well. And at the question of is this at the Ryder Cup level, of course it's not. It's not there. But the question that I have for you, being from Europe, is do you ever think that the President's Cup will ever reach the Ryder Cup level?
I don't, certainly not in the foreseeable future, in the respect that the Ryder Cup is so far ahead in terms of history. You know, the President's Cup is only 20 years old, the Ryder Cup is 80 years old, and of course it has that great history, particularly in the last 30 years of being extremely competitive. And there is, again, Europe is more united, of course, and it's a smaller area, catchment area, than the internationals have. So it's there's a collectivism there that the internationals don't quite have. And, of course, the Americans obviously have that, being from the same country. So I think the President's Cup is significantly behind that, for sure. I think at the moment it's perhaps similar to what the Ryder Cup was in the 60s and 70s, when it was very one-sided in the Americans' favour. So it's a good event. It's an event the players want to play in. It's fun to play in. It's fun to be part of. But it doesn't quite have that same intensity that the Ryder Cup has now. But, of course, if the internationals in the coming years don't not just get close and be competitive like they were this time, but actually start winning on a more consistent basis, they have to go and win next time out, and perhaps even win 2 years after that, then suddenly it becomes more of a competitive competition, and that's ultimately what draws people's interest. You know, if it's one-sided, people aren't going to really care, but if it's a proper competition, then people will be interested. But I think the President's Cup, potentially, not within the next decade or so, but I think even beyond that, if the game continues to grow as a spectator sport, a television sport in Asia, in South America and so on, particularly in Asia, if the viewers there tune into golf and they get into it even further, and more good players come through Asia and become and go on to the international team, suddenly there is more of a collectivism in that respect. And I think in the future, perhaps internationally, the President's Cup might gain some credibility. But it's so far behind the Ryder Cup in terms of its viewing figures. Ryder Cup is the most watched event by a country mile all around the world. It's one of the world's largest sporting events in terms of viewing figures, and of course in the income it makes the PGA of America and the European Tour is massive. So President's Cup is still a long way behind that. We have to remember, of course, it is still only 20 years into its lifetime. But it was important, of course, as I touched on there, that this event was competitive. Otherwise, that lifetime might have been cut short because the event was beginning to flag. We had some great moments back in 98, of course, when the Internationals won, and even the tie in 2003 was arguably even more stimulating and stirring to watch. So if we can get back to that level of competition, which is possible in the coming years, then the President's Cup will start to make up some ground. But at the moment, of course, as you say, it's still a long, long way behind the Ryder Cup. But that's not a bad thing, because the Ryder Cup is the biggest event in the game commercially. So the President's Cup, if it continues to grow and gets more competitive as time goes on, more Asian players get involved in it, more Asian fans start to watch it, it will start to grow commercially and even competitively. So I think the President's Cup has got a future in the game, a positive future, but it's certainly a long-term vision before it gets anywhere near the Ryder Cup.
I have to agree, and the biggest problem, I think, is like that, is spread all around the world. It's like you cannot get them together. Europe, that's a smaller place. Well, it's not a small place, but it's a smaller place compared to the rest of the world, right? So it's easier for the players also to bond together. They have more history and all that, and also the Ryder Cup, like you mentioned, so old and so many times that it happened. But definitely, it was a step in the right direction for the President's Cup, and I can't wait to see the next one. If this is what is up for, it's going to be a great, great, great tournament. Well, we have our final putts for today before we end the show, and we're going to talk a little bit about the start of the PGA Tour. Yes, the new start of the season is right now, this week, for the Fridays.com, even though if you don't believe it, yes, it is. And the European Tour is winding down. It's only two tournaments before the Race to Dubai final starts. So let's start with the PGA Tour. I really don't understand why they do this wraparound schedule. I just go into a snooze button. Hey, call me when the Sunny Open in Hawaii starts, or the Hyundai Tournament of Champions. Let's start from there. I mean, just look at the names that won last year, and I mean, no disrespect to any of them. Simon Bay won, Ben Martin, Ryan Moore, Nick Taylor, Bubba Watson, Charlie Hoffman, Robert Stren. When you come to think about it, the only name, big name there was Bubba Watson, and because it was the WGC. So. Even the big names, maybe for exemption this year, that Rory McIlroy has to fulfill a long-held promise to play in the Fridays.com. That's the only reason that he's playing there this year. Other than that, and I think that the way that he's playing, finally he's coming back to his best ability to play, and I think that he's the player to watch and maybe to win this weekend. There's Justin Rose from the President's Cup, Hideki Matsuyama, Carl Schwartzel, Steven Bodich, and Chris Kirk are coming to play. There's also going to be Brooks Koepka is going to be there, Brent Snedeker. There's going to be some very good names playing on this one, but after that, I think that it's just going to be a season just to wait until it starts next year.
Yeah, I think that's an important point, Carlos. And for me, I'm like you. I'm old-fashioned in respect. For me, the PGA Tour season begins in Hawaii every year with the Tournament of Champions and then the Sony Open, which is on a wonderful golf course at Wailea. That's what, for me, is still the start of the season. And I think golf's unique and it's negative in the respect that the season never really ends. It's just continuous. The European Tour is exactly the same. Their season will end at the final series in November in Dubai, and then after that, 2 weeks later, the next season starts in South Africa. So it was around all the time, and fans, and we are pretty ardent fans of the game, we are pretty dedicated fans, many people aren't. And even we are tired of it. We get fatigued by watching the game all the time, because every other sport, when you think about it, has an off-season, a proper off-season. The NFL, for example, I'm no expert, but they're off for 6 months. The season lasts from August until February, and that's it until August again. So they have a break. Baseball's the same. Soccer's the same in this country and in Europe. So all these other sports have an off-season to actually give the fans a time to actually miss the game and to look forward to when it comes back. Because when the game's on all, when tournaments are on every single week, they all start rolling into one, and it's hard to actually pick, remember which one's which. If I was to ask you, did you watch the PGA Tour event last week, you'll say, well, no, I didn't, but there'll be one on next week, because there always is, and that's not a good thing in many ways. But certainly, this week at thefriars.com. It's a chance to watch Rory in action, which is always a good thing. You know, Brooks Koepka's there as well, who obviously maybe could have been on the President's Cup team, maybe should have been on there. He played well here a couple of years ago. In fact, his real breakthrough in America was finishing, I think, second at the Friars 2 years ago. So we'll see how he gets on there. But I'm with you, fully. It's, for me, the lack of a lack of an off-season is a negative thing for the PGA Tour and the European Tour. We need to have a break, a good 2 or 3 months away from the game, like we had back in the old days where we had the season ended in August, didn't come back until January, and in between that time we had the Ryder Cup, the President's Cup, and even things like the Skins game and little kind of events that are fun exhibition games, rather than having fully fledged PGA Tour tournaments, because in the end I think fans and even players are somewhat fatigued. It's great money for them, but the more events there are, the more of a grind it is for everybody, and I don't think that's a good thing in the long run.
I totally agree. I couldn't agree more with you. We need the rest, but also
we do need the rest.
We do need the rest, but the players, hey, you know, all this stress that they have to go through, all this. Like, look at what Rory McIlroy said, that he would have even considered quitting the European Tour so that he could fit the schedule. You mentioned it's more money, but at the end of the day, I think that the people that are really caring about it is the PGA Tour, the European Tour. They are the ones that care. I have to get more money. It's not the players.
Mm-hmm.
Really, I think the players would be all up for having 1 or 2 months. Maybe, you know, hey,
yeah,
let's take November and December off, be with our families,
yeah,
have some more time for us. And I think that everybody, it's like you mentioned, all the other leagues, they all have downtime, and they haven't lost,
mm-hmm,
you know, the audience. On the contrary, we long for seeing them again. And when,
yeah,
it comes January, I would be just all for it. Let's just go and do it. And like you, I mean, I may be old school, but I would prefer for having maybe November and December off and take it back in January. So PGA Tour, I don't know if they understand that, but no, it's not working. It's not getting more audience that way. I'm talking about the European Tour, the Race to Dubai. I think, Kieran, this Race to Dubai and Race to Everything Everywhere. Now there's a Race to Everything. It's because of the FedEx Cup. I don't know. There's a race everywhere now at the end. But anyway, we watch it, and I know your take. Your take is more money for the richer, right? The rich are getting richer.
Well, yeah. Well, that's it.
Right?
I sound very much like Bernie Sanders when I talk about this stuff. But, yeah, the rich keep getting richer on the European Tour and the PGA Tour, of course, in these
everywhere,
final series events. And as you say, what do you think, Carlos?
I totally agree. And there's only two more tournaments left before the finals, which would be the Turkish Airlines Open, the WGC, HSBC Champions,
yep,
the BMW Masters, and the DP World Tour Championship, which has been,
yep,
won by Henrik Stenson the past 2 years. But we already talked about Rory McIlroy, Danny Willett there, and maybe Louis Hyson, the three top players with a big chance to be there. Shane Lowry's fourth, Justin Rose is fifth. But just two more tournaments, the one in Portugal this week and in Hong Kong the next week, and the next week and after that, before the final series. Rory definitely is the guy to beat there. But I would love to see Danny Willett challenge him there and maybe come on through for a change. But I do think at the end of the day, Rory McIlroy would be the one winning the Race to Dubai once again. So what's your take on this season ending for the European Tour?
Yeah, I think Rory has to be the favourite. But one person I think, seeing having a strong final series, maybe not necessarily winning the whole thing because he is quite far behind, but I think Henrik Stenson, you mentioned him there,
mm-hmm,
also winning it 2 years ago. This, he played so well in the FedEx Cup, of course. He came so close to winning the $10 million again for a second time. He finished second twice during the playoffs there back in August. And he's someone who, for some reason, inexplicable really, he always seems to play well at this time of year, the latter half of the season. And I think he'll go into these last four events playing really strongly. I think he'll have a really good showing, might even win one or two of them. Of course, whether that is quite enough for him to actually win the overall thing is debatable, because he is starting in 16th position after a fairly mediocre season to this point. So Rory is definitely the favourite. Obviously, Danny Willett's right behind him, only 300,000 points behind him. So he's got a chance as well of potentially, you know, ending the season, you know, what's been a great season for him, both in America, playing well in big events, and obviously playing well in Europe on a strong note. But the final series, of course, is like the FedEx Cup in the respect that it is a cash grab for these guys. They're out there to make money, and that's fine. They're professionals. That's ultimately what it's all about for them. I do think, in some ways, the race to Dubai has a little bit more credibility than the FedEx Cup in the respect that the format isn't quite so contrived. You know, there is no points reset like we see in the FedEx Cup. So if someone is £500 million ahead of someone else, they're going to win because they deserve to win. You know, we're going to see the guy who's ranked 20th coming through in the last day and winning the whole thing out of nowhere. So I think the race to Dubai has some credibility that the FedEx Cup does not. That said, I don't think it particularly attracts the attention of the viewers. Particularly, one reason is I don't think money, rich guys getting richer, is particularly attractive to regular fans. And also secondly, it's coming at the time of year when everybody else, we as fans and all other fans all over the world, are watching other sports. You know, guys in America, you're watching the NFL and so on. In this country, we're watching the Premier League football and the Champions League football in Europe. So the game of golf somewhat goes into in the background. Despite all the big money, all the big events, that said, these events are obviously, they've got fantastic fields, and that always draws attention. You see players at McIlroy, Rose, and Stenson playing regularly. That is certainly a good thing. And so we'll see how it goes down in the next few weeks. Obviously, the last 2 weeks coming up, Portugal this week and then Hong Kong, will determine who qualifies for the final series, and people obviously trying to get in that top 110 to remain on the European Tour and save their card. That's another thing I have to remember, going into the next 2 weeks is a massive thing. And right now, Chris Paisley is the guy on the 110th position, and SSP Charavia from India is the guy just on the outside. So big 2 weeks for those players there on that bubble. So see how they get on. But for the main event, for the 4 weeks coming up, as I say, fantastic fields, great events on paper, but I just don't think they really attract the attention of the general public. That said, Rory has a chance, really, to make a statement, I think, going into next year. Obviously, as we touched on earlier, Jordan Spieth and Jason Day have made all the headlines this season. Rory has somewhat fallen behind in that respect. This is his chance, his platform, to really make a statement that he's back and ready to take those two players on in the majors next year.
And we can't wait to see what happens. And definitely, I just can't wait for the Masters. That's the one I'm waiting for. Let's just get right to it and start the majors next season, right now, next week. But anyway, we still have a couple more minutes, about three more minutes, and I just want to throw one question your way. What do you think about Tiger Woods calling Davis Love III and to want to be a Ryder Cup assistant? Is this him saying, next year I'm not going to be outright in the Davis Cup, the Ryder Cup? Or is this him saying, hey, I know my career is coming down after this, so what do you think? Is it a good idea? Is it true? What's going on there?
Well, it was interesting, and I do know that Tiger and Davis Love are particularly good friends. You know, they're in some ways contemporaries. Davis is obviously slightly older than Tiger, but they both played competitively together at really the same time, and were both top players around the same era. And particularly in recent times, they've played a lot of golf together. They played practice rounds at the PGA Championship, for example, together. So they are good friends. I'm sure Tiger is trying to lend his support to a friend. But I think Tiger, as you say, he spoke about it as recently as well. And he admits that his career is now in its last quarter, if you like, at best. Because of injuries he's had, who knows what kind of player he's going to come back like next season when we see him return from this latest back surgery. So is Tiger accepting that perhaps his time is coming to an end? I think perhaps deep down that is the case. I'm not sure if he's, we know about the injuries and so on, but I'm not even sure he's quite as motivated as he used to be. But I also think that Tiger wants to, perhaps in a sense, change his image that he's had. We all go back to the scandal that happened in 2009, and that was a massively damaging thing in so many respects, both to his personality and also his brand as a icon in the game and in world sport. That's a massively damaging thing. And even though, because people nowadays, they don't remember Tiger for being arguably the best player of all time with 14 majors and 80 PGA Tour events, they remember him for the scandal, remember him for this decline in form, which has been quite sad to watch. So perhaps for Tiger, you know, being part of the Ryder Cup team on the fringes, if you like, as an assistant captain, that's a way to him to get back in the game and change his image in that respect. And obviously, I'm sure he'll want to be a Ryder Cup captain in the future. And one thing we've also seen, of course, is PGA of America are adopting a similar philosophy to the European Tour in the respect that future Ryder Cup captains will also be involved previously as assistants on other Ryder Cup teams. So there's a continuity in that respect. So Tiger obviously wants to be a Ryder Cup captain, I'm sure, at some point in the future, maybe in 6, 7, 8 years' time. But to do that, he has to be part of the backroom team, be an assistant, learn the process of actually being on that side of the thing as well. So there are potentially different motivations for Tiger Woods going forward, and I think all of them have some sort of credibility. I think it's probably a mixture of all these things. But for Tiger, you know, I would rather see him back on that team and playing well, because in the end, whatever you may think of Tiger Woods, positively or negatively, when he was at his best, it was breathtaking to watch, and I'd love to see him have one last season where he gets back to that level, but I think that's extremely unlikely now.
We'll see what happens. Well, Back Niners, that wraps up another week of the Back Nine Report presented by eDraft.com. It's always our pleasure to bring you the latest in the world of golf. Thank you for listening to us for the past 90 minutes. Special thanks to you, Kieran, for jumping in for Fred Alvader. You're always welcome and great addition to the show. Don't forget to join us again next Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time here on Block Talk Radio, and also to tune in or download our show on iTunes. Haven't done so, follow the show. Our Twitter ID is at Back9Report, with the number 9 in the middle. My name is Carlos Torres, along with Kieran Clark. We wish you to be happy, be blessed, and enjoy the great game of golf. Happy golfing, everybody.
Good night, everybody.